From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
You know, the people of Venezuela need the support of everybody in this hemisphere, particularly our friends in Latin America, speaking up for their democracy, for their future, standing up for their human rights.
That was former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton speaking after the announcement of the results of this past Sunday's legislative elections in Venezuela.
It is tragic that what was the richest country in Latin America, one of the richest countries resource-wise in the world, has been so mismanaged, and that people have been so oppressed and mistreated over the course of the last, 15 years. So we've got to stand with the people of Venezuela, and I certainly will stand with you. And hopefully this election will begin the process of taking back democracy and creating opportunity for the Venezuelan people.
According to the latest tally, the right captured enough seats in the assembly to put together a two-thirds majority with a conservative group of indigenous legislators. If that holds, the new majority would be sufficient to call a constitutional referendum, replace judges, and even impeach the country's socialist president. However, President Nicolas Maduro apparently does not intend to go gently into that good night just yet. Wednesday, he called on Chavistas around the country to come together to reflect on the electoral defeat as he organized another type of legislature in Caracas. Gathered around an old cattle truck, decked out as a stage with speakers, people handed around a microphone, shouting out ideas on how to move forward, to loud applause. Mobs of grassroots supporters of the socialist revolution attended the street assembly to debate, exchange ideas, and continue the construction of the Bolivarian movement. Such meetings are being assembled across the country. Gloria LaRiva is a labor, community, and anti-war activist based in San Francisco. She's visited Venezuela many times since the election of the late President Hugo Chavez in 1998 and has consulted with leading members of the Bolivarian Revolution, including the late President Chavez and the current President Nicolas Maduro. She's also the 2016 presidential candidate of the Party for Socialism and Liberation here in the U.S. We spoke with her from San Francisco via Skype Thursday. Gloria, welcome. I've been watching the unfolding situation in Venezuela and wanted to get your take on what's happened and what it means.
December 6th was the National Assembly elections, in which, after the final results were reported by the National Electoral Commission, the right wing has received a supermajority that will give them extra powers to undo what they hope they will be able to undo, much of the progressive legislation and social programs that have been existing since the beginning of Hugo Chavez's presidency, which began in 1999. It's a major setback, but it's not a historical defeat like what took place in other struggles, the overthrow, for example, and the of the Allende government in 1973, or even what took place with Nazi Germany's rise. It is a time for reflection and regathering of the revolutionary forces in Venezuela that is led by the United Socialist Party of Venezuela, the PSUV, and its coalition called the Great Patriotic Pole.
So, some of the similarities between what's happened in Venezuela over the past few years and what happened at a more accelerated rate back in 1973 in Chile, particularly hinge on the economy. It was famously declared that in 1973 that the U.S. should make the Chilean economy scream. And the U.S. has been doing everything, along with the domestic bourgeoisie in Venezuela, to do exactly that, with apparently some effect.
Oh, yes. It is a classic pattern and scheme of what they did with Chile, of making the economy scream. That's what they have done. The majority of people in Venezuela who were extremely poor had no social programs, no right to health care or education, higher education, have benefited greatly, and yet they Many of them voted against the Maduro government because of the economic crisis. What does the economic crisis consist of? Over 100% inflation, meaning that the wages that people may have are cut in half by the inflation, as well as a concerted and coordinated effort by the capitalist food importers, those who also control the great amount of imports that come in on household goods, toilet paper, you know, Pampers, people have heard about that. And what these companies are doing are hoarding, withholding all these products from the stores, resulting in empty shelves, and has been reported in U.S. media, long, long lines that last hours for people to get the things that they need. But it was a campaign to make people blame the current government. And as we know, often the incumbent party or candidates or politicians lose office when people perceive that the economic crisis is due to their fault. The government, on the other hand, of Venezuela, not only has now, by the end of December 2015, will have constructed 1 million homes, which are given to the people who previously lived in hovels, in shacks along the mountainside of Caracas, and they have built universities that are free to the youth. They have wiped out illiteracy in the early years of this revolutionary process called the Bolivarian Revolution. And the stores, there are stores called Mercal and other grocery stores that are subsidized by the government. That is, that the government pays the regular price but subsidizes food, the essentials for these stores to be stocked, and people can have a basic basket filled of their necessities. Well, now that the right wing has won the election, they plan to undo all of that because the ruling class, the bourgeoisie, the capitalist class, has an absolute disdain for the poor and wants to make sure that all that money from the oil profits that used to go to these programs, the government right now spends 60% of its budget on social needs, including pension for seniors, all the kind of things that the public needs. The right wing, which has won the supermajority of the parliament, wants to reverse those programs and make sure that it fills their pockets of those who used to rule in Venezuela. That's the situation that they are facing as the right-wing politicians take office on January 5th.
Okay, so what we've seen happen in terms of that which can be quantified with simple vote cast is a swing from about 60-40, you know, say at the time of Hugo Chavez's last re-election, just inside 60-40, as represented by the seats, not necessarily the popular vote, but the seats in the assembly. It's slightly over two-thirds, so we're talking, I guess, about 67-33 or something, but the popular vote was closer to about 60-40. So you have like a swing constituency that in the aggregate is about 20%. The programs you talk about, for example, 1 million new housing units for people who were living in entirely substandard housing, if they were living in anything that could be called housing at all. 1 million housing units translates to maybe 5 million people living in new apartments with in a country of 30 million people, or about one-sixth of the population that are affected just by that one program. These are constituencies that are going to be very hard to rattle, regardless of the other difficulties in the economy. And, of course, as the right moves into government, much of the economic distress that exists there is going to be blamed on them going forward. What do you see happening in terms of a response from the people who are invested heavily in the revolution and, you know, 40% of whom are still, you know, still voting for it?
Yes, and it's important to note that the United Socialist Party of Venezuela, the PSUV, has about 6.5 million members, and they have expressed that they can count on 5.5 million people in the population who are solid supporters, who, despite all the media campaign against the left, still voted and stayed loyal to the party. But in addition to that, there's a great mobilizing capacity in the country. When you saw this election of that lasted several months, the right wing did not use its constituency to rally in the streets in large numbers because they don't really have that ability. What they did was they depended on the economic crisis to win them votes. And the PSUV, on the other hand, has the ability of the people in the neighborhoods throughout the country to resist any dismantling of their programs. I'd like to say, too, that the Bolivarian Revolution is more than just funding programs and providing the goods and benefits to the people. It's also the empowerment of the population. There are communal councils throughout the country. There are women's organizations that has been formed, a youth organization. It's a way of trying to make sure that the struggle is not overthrown. Now, unfortunately, the government has had to depend on elections throughout these 16 years of the Bolivarian Revolution. And out of 20 referenda and votes, 18 of them were favorable to the left, to the people's benefit. But two, in particular this last one on December 6th, was a failure. It was a defeat for the left because of the economic situation. So it will depend on what the PSUV and its alliance with other forces is able to do. Right now, they're in a time of reflection. They're going to have a Congress within a few days. They're going to figure out, depending on what the right wing will do, the U.S. government, it should be clear, with all its agencies, the CIA, the USAID, Alliance for the Agency for International Development, and the National Endowment for Democracy, which financed electoral groups inside the country, non-governmental organizations, to fashion the message against the left. The U.S. government has been directing the right wing ever since. It's been stated and is true that the right wing is a coalition called the MUD, the United Democratic Roundtable, which actually is not united. They have a lot of differences among them, which have already begun to show. They're going to be fracturing within the right wing because of their own personal career ambitions. And some are more prone to the issue of violence, taking out vengeance on the left afterwards, and others who want to play a more moderate role, while at the same time all want to return the economic power to the corporations and their politicians. So I think they themselves in the right wing is trying to figure out how quickly should we go. They may try to move very quickly to overturn key components of the social programs and may even try to revise the Constitution.
It's something that bears on the relative the relation of forces in the country impacted both on the election and also is a condition that exists going forward, and that is the control of the media in the main by private wealthy private interests by the right wing. I don't think people really grasp that the public media in Venezuela is about maybe an eighth in terms of the outlets. If that of what the privately owned media is. And so when you have economic difficulties that are touching everyone, you also have a megaphone that allows the right to define and position exactly what the causes are and the nature of it. And that's been something that's going to continue, even as the new assembly looks to defund the government media.
Oh, yes. And if you walk through Venezuela, like in, let's say, Caracas on the main streets and see the newspaper sellers, the overwhelming number of newspapers are right-wing and have screaming headlines, absolutely ridiculous, sensational headlines that are often lying. And, of course, as you said, the television. But I want to recommend to your listeners that if they want to find out on daily update of what's taken place in Venezuela. They can actually tune in to Telesur .tv. It's T-E-L-E-S-U-R net dot net. No, TelesurTV.net. TelesurTV.net. And there is an English component to it. You can get a lot on English, including even video. And in addition, I would say that people should definitely watch the movie The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. That was a movie about the 2002 coup, which, if it had succeeded, it would have been a fascist regime in place. And you'll see the same parties in that coup who are now actively have won offices in the new parliament. Watch it to see the possible repeat of history and how the people will undoubtedly fight back against that attempt.
And one of the interesting things about that movie, what's depicted in that movie, and also what's interesting observing the Western media here, both at the time of the coup and for this election, and all of the elections since 1998 when Hugo Chavez first won, is that every election has been held under a cloud in the Western media and the local media, saying that, you know, it's corrupt, you can't trust the outcome is being managed, the government is crooked, etc. And they were doing that even up to the day of this election, with Capriles calling for people to go into the streets as soon as the results were announced. And suddenly, when it appeared the right one, it's a democratic election. The result is valid.
Exactly. And the day of the election here in the United States on Yahoo, the Business Insider, was a huge headline. And listen to this headline. It said, "The most miserable country in the world is going to hold elections, and it will be a disaster." The most miserable country in the world? Are they talking about the suffering of the Haitian people?
Right.
Or the destruction of Iraq or Syria, Libya? No, no. They're talking about Venezuela. It's an absolute outrage and a total lie. But to say that the elections will be a disaster was because they feared that there would be a majority for the progressive forces. And as you said, in the snap of a finger, as soon as the results came in, it was like, oh, justice won. And not a comment again about the so-called fraud of the elections, which Jimmy Carter had characterized as the most democratic in the world. In fact, CNN had solicited Eva Golinger, who was an advisor to Hugo Chavez for a time, and she's an attorney in the United States. They had solicited her to write an article about the elections, how they work, before the elections took place, CNN in Espanol. When she did, and put one simple sentence that Jimmy Carter had said they were the most democratic, after a back and forth, they refused to accept the article unless they could qualify that statement by Jimmy Carter. So the U.S. is behind this victory of the right. They're behind the economic destabilization. The U.S. wants to get its claws on the fact that Venezuela has the largest reserves of oil in the world, as well as other major natural resources. We see what they've done in the Middle East. We see what they've done to destroy the progressive countries in that region that had provided for the people due to nationalized oil. Venezuela's oil is nationalized. That's at the heart of this whole matter in with respect to Latin America, Venezuela, and of course the effect it could have on Cuba.
You know, and if you look at the U.S. policy over the period from Chavez's first taking office back 16 years ago now, that certainly was and remains true, what you just said. But in addition to that, what's developed is a regional consolidation of economic consolidation, a more or less a political consolidation around the issues of sovereignty and self-determination, regardless of the nature of the regimes that Venezuela was at the heart of developing. You had First, Venezuela expressing solidarity with Cuba, then the development of ALBA, Petrocaribe, and these other regional organizations, culminating in CELAC and UNASUR, and the United States essentially looking at from the outside looking into what the developments there with lopsided votes at the OAS on meddling in Venezuela and such that were never seen before. Now, the U.S. took out Gaddafi for, many say, for the same reason that he was looking to develop in Africa the same way and bankroll it with the oil revenues of Libya. And we see what happened to Libya. Yet Hillary Clinton says Venezuela was mismanaged before and that something else needs to be done when you're looking at the example of Libya as a product of her policy.
Absolutely. And Hillary Clinton will now turn her attention to Venezuela as well as the rest of Latin America and say that now it's time to bring democracy to Cuba. She's already said that before. It's a very trying time for Latin America, for the Unity Project that, as you said, was launched by Venezuela and Cuba's Unity, the ALBA, A-L-B-A, the Alliance, the Bolivarian Alliance for the Americas, and CELAC, which is the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States. The reason that's so important is because it is a direct challenge to the Organization of American States, the OAS, which was started by the U.S. in 1947 with the aim, along with the Atlantic, the NATO Treaty, to try to dominate geopolitics in the world and to keep Latin America as its backyard. So the CELAC does not include Canada or the U.S., and that is a very, very big challenge to the U.S., and one which they decided we have to undo Venezuela's revolution, and they hope at some point Cuba's. So that's why I think U.S. solidarity among the progressive forces here, and our main objective should be that of educating the people of the role of the United States government using tax dollars to undermine sovereignty and independence and bring about a counter-revolution in Latin America. It's a difficult time for us because for many years of this Bolivarian Revolution, you really actually had not much news coverage because so much good was happening. And now that the elections were approaching, you all of a sudden saw a plethora of articles attacking the government as a dictatorship, a miserable country, and so on. So our role is that of education, to tell the truth and to mobilize people for the future.
And finally, the targeting of Venezuela is a direct shot at the heart of consolidation in Latin America and the Caribbean. The U.S. also targeted Argentina, one of the primary economic engines of that project, and Brazil. They're both in the sights. You have the win by the right of the presidency in Argentina. You have the development of an infrastructure for a multipolar world with China developing, for example, the Transcontinental Railroad. And at both ends of it now, you're looking at the possibility of the right capturing power, with Brazil, of course, also being a part of the BRICS countries, which is the global focal point of multipolarity. Is there something that people can do here to sort of blunt the attack by the United States?
You mentioned Argentina, and it should also be stated that there was a great destabilization campaign that was going on in the years of Cristina Fernandez, the president who just left office yesterday. Scandalous accusations against her government that were false but had an effect in the population with that same intent of trying to bring back the right. What we can do in the United States, again, the most important thing is education of our of the role of the United States in trying to dismantle the progressive movement. And if people would like to join in to find out how they can support, for example, on the day of the elections, we had rallies in several cities, very important public rallies to support the Venezuelan people in Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Washington, D.C., and several cities in Canada. They can visit the website, which is Cuba-Venezuela.org. That's the new organization that has arisen in the last month in the United States. Again, it's Cuba-Venezuela.org, and we can plug you in to the activities that are taking place to say that By helping the Venezuelan people, we are also helping ourselves. Danny Glover, the well-known actor, spoke in Los Angeles on December 6th and said precisely that. He said, we must defend Venezuela's sovereignty for the sake of defending the independence of other countries. But he did say, when we help Venezuela, we help ourselves.
Gloria LaRiva, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, Venezuela's election results created an odd symmetry with neighboring Argentina, which held elections last month. Viewed together with socialist President Nicolas Maduro, whose term doesn't expire until 2019, Venezuela's incoming right-wing National Assembly presents a virtual photo negative of Argentina's government, where a new right-wing president will share power with a left-wing legislature. One of the signature battles conducted by outgoing leftist President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, which drew both national and international support for her administration, was the hard line taken towards the so-called vulture funds as they attempted to extract more than $1 billion from Argentina's treasury following a New York court decision awarding two U.S. vulture funds $1.3 billion on debts bought up after Argentina's debt crisis of 2001, with others in line claiming up to a total of $10 billion outstanding. Over the past 2 years, Fernandez de Kirchner successfully shepherded two resolutions through the UN General Assembly, supporting a nation's right to restructure debt without interference from foreign courts. The resolutions drew lopsided support from the world body, this year garnering 136 votes in favor, with only 6 countries, the US, Canada, Israel, Germany, Japan, and Britain, voting no, and 41 countries abstaining, many from the European Union. But under the administration of newly elected President Mauricio Macri, Argentina's position towards this debt may be in for a dramatic change. Macri has wasted no time in announcing his administration's future ministerial positions, with personnel and policy changes that will likely present a radical departure from the social, economic, and foreign policy of his predecessor. And there were reports that the incoming government is ready to resume talks in the long-running dispute with holdover creditors as soon as it takes office. Those reports were confirmed by court-appointed mediator Daniel Pollack Wednesday. Pollack said he had met Argentina's incoming Secretary of Finance, Luis Caputo, at his offices in New York City earlier this week. Throughout his election campaign, Argentina's president-elect vowed to reach an agreement with holdout creditors, claiming that that would lead the way to increased foreign lending. Caputo, the new finance minister, is an ex-Wall Street insider and former president of Deutsche Bank Argentina. He would be in control of negotiating a deal with the vulture holdout funds. In his statement Wednesday, Pollack confirmed that he had met at the end of last week with representatives of the bondholders who hold approximately $10 billion of liens against Argentina. And we close our newscast today with the following commentary from imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu Jamal.
The wages of fear. In the wake of the carnage in Paris and the subsequent events in San Bernardino, California, a wave of fear has swept through France and the U.S. In America, prominent politicians have been trying to outdo each other in the most outrageous fashion, from attacking the families of suspected ISIS people to plans for caging Syrian refugees in internment camps. In a matter of days, American minds have echoed the same xenophobic themes has sent over 100,000 Japanese, mostly Japanese-Americans, I might add, to U.S. concentration camps, men, women, and children, back in the 1940s. In the succeeding decades, American presidents have apologized for these injustices, and reparations, albeit modest, have been paid to survivors. But today, the sons and grandsons of those who clamored for Japanese internments now clamor for Syrian and Arab internments, proving the apologies and reparations were but yesterday's crocodile tears, empty as salt water. For politicians exploiting fear are as common as shells along the seashore. They can't help themselves. After over a decade of failed and pointless war, why is there more, not less, fear? What's wrong with this picture? The politicians who are selling the toxin of fear for their own ambitions are leading the nation down the yellow brick road of disaster. No good can come from this. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu Jamal.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.